Welcome to episode 6 of the Ground to Sound podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. Remember, please subscribe to the podcast. Make sure you rate and review the podcast. You can follow me on Instagram at StephanAlexMusic. All the information for the podcast is on there, along with anything else I might be up to. Today's episode is a really cool one because I got to talk to Chris Rizzo. Chris Rizzo and I have been working together really closely. He's a music producer, and he does a lot of commercial work, a lot of sync work. In fact, a lot of you have probably heard the music he's done just by watching TV. So I manage him specifically on the other end of the spectrum, which is writing and producing tracks for artists. For a lot of musicians and music producers, they don't really know what to do once they've built these skills. Sometimes they've been in a band for 10 years and then they don't know what to do after that, or they've been producing their friends' bands and don't know how to break out of that and work with bigger artists. But the reality is, it's just about making connections in the industry. One thing will lead to another. And if you're a good person to work with and you're talented, then things will just come. We talk about the idea of being lucky in this industry, which is so much of it. Chris is a great person to learn from because he's spent that time playing drums in a band, learning what it's like, learning that musicianship, which is so huge once you become a producer. So you can follow him on Instagram at Chris Rizzo. That's right, Chris Rizzo. There's a T in there. And you can also follow his new music project, Boca Brothers Music, at Boca Bros Music on Instagram. So lots of exciting things for him and I as we move forward. And if anyone has any interest in talking about the songwriting process, the producing process, or just the management process, you know, please hit me up, like I said, on Instagram at StephanAlexMusic. All right. Thanks so much and enjoy the conversation with Chris Rizzo.
Okay, cool.
Is that coffee you're drinking now?
It is, yeah.
Abbey Road mug?
Oh, okay. Yeah, man. I got this at Abbey Road Studios. So
awesome.
We, me, Alex, and one of our other friends, Kev, took a trip to London. I think when they were like trying to separate from whatever was going on, like however many years ago.
Brexit?
Yeah. And ticket prices just got like ridiculously cheap. And I was still, still at college, maybe like the end of college, or so I didn't have a lot of money. And we were like, oh man, now's probably the time to go. Like tickets were so cheap. Alex was always in for a trip. And then, so me and him bought the tickets, and then our friend Kev found out and he got really jealous. He's like, yo, I want to come, and bought his tickets like last minute. So we went, and obviously, yeah, we had to go to Abbey Road, but I didn't know they don't really like let you in the studio part of it. They let you like kind of hang outside the wall and like look at the front door. But I asked the security guard if he could like take my phone and like get up closer to the door and take a picture for me, at least so I had like a better picture than just from the wall. And then, you know, they have the gift shop where they'll let you hang out there as long as you want.
Is it like really crowded? I just imagine being crowded all the time.
Outside?
Yeah, just anywhere around the
studio. Yeah, I mean,
pretty crowded.
Yeah, there's definitely always people there. When I was there, it wasn't too bad because you are outside at the end of the day, so people are kind of spread out, and there's a big wall, you know, there's like this gated wall outside of it that people are like signing and stuff. When we went, it wasn't too bad, but yeah, I mean, there's definitely always people there. And then probably when there's famous people around, there's even more people there. What is crazy is the crosswalk where, you know, actual album, there's people just like don't care. They're just walking in the middle of the street while cars are trying to drive. And it's just,
I can't even imagine trying to drive down there.
No.
I'm surprised they haven't just closed that road off, like wherever.
It's nuts. It's so disrespectful to the people just trying to like go about their day.
Yeah. So what are you usually drinking in the morning? What kind of coffee are you drinking?
I change it up a lot, man. I'm a person who doesn't like to, do the same thing over and over again. I just kind of get bored. Probably isn't a good thing, but I need a routine. But right now I made an Americano. So like a double shot of espresso and then just hot water to top off the mug.
Yeah.
But usually I'll just make, you know, regular like black coffee in the French press. Because I just love the process of the French press. I don't know if it really makes a difference in taste. They say it does, but I don't really notice it.
I don't know either.
And do you have one? Do you use one?
I used to use it a lot more than I do now.
Yeah.
But I have like every form of making coffee is just sitting on my counter.
Yeah.
You know, there's like the regular Mr. Coffee pot. There's the Keurig. There's the Chemex thing, which I'm using more now.
Right.
So there's just everything. And then I have one of those like Nespresso machines.
Oh, yeah.
Where you buy the little pods and it makes this. Yeah. But right. I forget to buy pods and then I don't use it for, you know.
Yeah.
6 months.
Yeah. I have a like a DeLonghi espresso machine.
Nice.
But just like a little one just to, I don't have a lot of room upstairs. So I make a lot of espressos. I love espresso, especially like after lunch. But the French press in the morning is just really nice because it kind of just gives me something to focus on for like 8 minutes. You know what I mean? It's just like the process of grinding the beans and putting it in and like measuring everything and waiting the 4 minutes.
When you're making espresso, are you timing everything?
No, the espresso, you know, you just like pop it in and you drop it.
Fill it.
Yeah.
Okay.
The French press is more of like a routine and, you know, like I'm like measuring the temperature of the water. Like I'm getting crazy.
Yeah.
Just like checking that it's exactly right and then pouring it over and then waiting the 4 minutes before I like slowly press it down. And I just bought a new French press that's like metal. It's like insulated aluminum or something. So it stays hot for like 5 hours. It's like ridiculous.
So it's not the typical glass.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like aluminum. Cause I remember I used to travel to Dallas for work a lot. We stayed in this really nice hotel and they had a French press that was like this big aluminum insulated French press. And I was like, damn, I got to get one of these one day. And I thought they would be like crazy expensive, but it was like $30. Like why wouldn't I get this?
Yeah. Now, how did you start drinking coffee?
Oh, man. So, yeah, that came kind of late for me because, I don't know, all my life, I hated coffee. I hated the smell of it. I hated, like, the bitter taste. It was so nasty. I mean, obviously, when you're young, like, I don't know how many young people, like, young little kids love coffee. But even all through, like, high school and through most of college, I couldn't drink it. It was just so nasty, especially in college when you want to be like staying up late, and like studying or working on papers, like anything to help you stay up. Me, Alex, and Kev, those guys that I mentioned before who went to London, we took a trip to Colorado. We took a road trip because this artist that we really liked, Pretty Lights, he's from Colorado, you know, the DJ.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was playing in Colorado. He's from there. So we were like, let's just take a road trip for New Year's Eve. Go check it out. And that was also the year that they like were legalizing recreational marijuana in Colorado.
Okay.
So we just wanted to go see what was going on there. None of us were 21 yet, I don't think. So we weren't actually allowed to go into any of the dispensaries or buy anything. We just like wanted to see what was going on. And it was just like, see all the hype. Which was ridiculous, but anyway, I'm getting off track. So we're driving to Colorado. We took my mom's like SUV because there was a lot of room in the back. And the plan was just like one dude drives, one person sits shotgun, and then one guy who was just driving sleeps in the back. And we would just rotate. And like, so we didn't really have to stop that much, you know, we just wanted to like get there as soon as possible. And I remember just like some points of the drive when it's like 2 a.m. and you're in the middle of Nebraska and it's like -2 degrees outside. There's no lights on the street and you're just like struggling to stay awake. I was like, how the hell am I going to do this? So at one point we stopped at a 7-Eleven. I think we were getting gas. And I was like, I got to try to get a coffee. That's the only way I'm going to stay awake, even though I hate it. So I got like a hazelnut 7-Eleven coffee, loaded it up with cream, loaded it up with sugar just to make it like drinkable. And I remember just like taking the first sip and being like, this is not bad. This is okay. I can deal with this.
Right.
Also because it was so sweet. So then from that day on, I like wouldn't drink anything but hazelnut coffee with cream and sugar. And then, I don't know, eventually maybe I got used to it, or maybe I realized that I probably shouldn't drink all this cream and sugar. So like, you know, at one point I stopped putting cream and, you know, it was just sugar. And then I moved on to just like regular coffee and just sugar. And then eventually, like, I got used to the taste of it and I just enjoyed it more when it was black. And I also like started drinking at better cafes and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like really learned to appreciate a good cup of black coffee. Cause you know, like when you have good coffee beans and like it's roasted well, like there's nothing better than just like a black coffee.
Yeah. And has that smell changed for you? It doesn't gross you out?
No, anymore. I love it. Oh my God.
It's like, it's the best.
Yeah. No, Emily, my girlfriend, still hates it. Like every morning when I make coffee,
really?
She still hates it. She's a tea drinker, but no, dude, oh my God, I love it. It's the best. I can't live without it. Now I'm addicted.
Yeah. Oh, so, okay. So it started for you as more, because for a lot of people, they're telling me, you know, it's a very social thing. Mm. And then some people have that one experience, like you're saying, where I just needed to stay up.
Right.
And I figured, let me try this thing. And then from there, it just takes off.
Yeah. It was like, turned into an addiction more. It came out of necessity. My love for coffee.
There you go. Now, the trip you're explaining to me sounds a lot like a trip that, if you've traveled with bands, that's just something you can do pretty easily. Was that before or after you were playing pretty regularly in a band?
That was around
during.
Yeah, that was around the same time that me and Alex were in Montgomery. So it was just the two of us on that trip. We never did, and I still like it bums me out. We never did like a huge like touring thing. We took a couple trips to like upstate New York to play at some like colleges and like college parties and stuff, but we never did any like crazy touring and like, or driving across the country to play. Like I know you guys did all that like kind of crazy
stuff.
Bit,
yeah.
But yeah, no, it definitely was a similar experience in that sense of like staying up late. You know, you have something to do. You and the boys are just trying to crash your mom's car and destroy it.
You're either kind of made for that or you're not. Because even now, having that experience of traveling in that way with a band and just kind of being gross and staying up late and all that has completely, you know, it's essentially the way that I travel now. If I have to take a 3-hour trip or a 4-hour trip or something, it's just, oh, I know how to do this.
Yeah,
you know?
No, totally. Yeah.
I've done this. So 3 hours, that's easy.
It preps you. No, definitely preps you. I love driving too. So we just went this past New Year's Eve up to Vermont. Me, some of my friends, my girlfriend, then, you know, my sister, her husband, and a bunch of her friends, we drove up to Vermont, which I think is also a 3 or 4 hour drive. We just went and I can't remember. I don't know why.
Yeah, I think I've gone up to Killington. I want to say about 4 or 5, maybe. It kind of depends, but yeah.
Yeah. And, I drove the whole way. I drove, you know, me, Emily, and two of my buddies the whole way, just because I love it. And I just got a new car not too long ago, so it was nice to like break that in.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I love driving. I don't know how you are about long distance driving and stuff.
I mean, it's not with my, I got this herniated disc problem now, so I can't sit terribly long. But usually I'd be pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't start talking about my back problems because I just feel like an old man.
That's what I was going to say. You sound like old. People are going to think you're like 60 on here.
I know. This is bad. So you're a drummer, but you know, how did that all start for you? Just music in general. Was there a lot of music in the household when you were growing up?
Or? Yeah, definitely. My dad and my uncle, his brother, were always really into music. I don't know where they got it from, because I don't think anyone like older from their generation, I think it's just growing up in the 60s and 70s, like when Santana was like the man, Jimi Hendrix and all these dudes. My dad loved like Deep Purple and The Doors. My dad's a keyboard player, so he's really into, you know, like huge keyboardists. I think just growing up in that time, everybody was like inspired to be like a rock and roller. Like I know Billy Joel even was like saying that he was like a classically trained pianist, but he really got into rock and roll when he saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show. And now look at him. He's like,
yeah, for that generation.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just
they were just inspired by music. I don't know how many people are inspired by it today, but so there was a lot of music in their household. Obviously when I was a kid, my dad wanted me to play something, and he came up to me when I was probably 7 or 8 and asked me like, do you want to play an instrument? You should try to play something. I'll let you play whatever you want. He didn't force me into like anything specific. And I don't know why I gravitated towards drums. I think because I saw that he was a keyboard player, you know, just naturally as a kid, I wanted to do something different. And I think he was probably happy that I wanted to be a drummer, because then I could like accompany him at home while he's playing his keyboards. I'm like playing with him on drums. We did that a lot. I just randomly chose drums and I really loved it and got obsessed with it. And then, just over time playing with him and my uncle, that's like really where I started. And eventually like every middle schooler like starts a band, you know, just playing covers of, you know, Smoke on the Water and stuff. Also around a similar time is when I got into actual music production. Cause I was just like at my uncle's house one day, I was a little bit older, maybe like 13 or 14. And he just bought an iMac, you know, like, and one of like the slick ones. This is after like the big bulky, like color ones that they were like trying to sell.
And they were white, but they were thinner than the bulky ones.
They just looked more slick. So it was the newer ones. And obviously these versions came with GarageBand. I remember opening it up because I didn't know what the hell it was. And just sitting there for like hours, like grabbing Apple loops, which are just like samples, you know what I mean? Also samples that like will adjust to whatever tempo and key that you have. Literally everything for you. And I remember just dragging those onto, you know, the window and just like making a song and thinking it was like the dopest thing ever. Even though I wasn't really doing anything. And yeah, from there I just kind of got obsessed with GarageBand, which is crazy. It's making me realize that Apple has inspired my music production, and that's where it all began. It's crazy.
I'm sure you're the only one.
No, I don't think so. I think it's good for companies to make things like more accessible for people. You know what I mean?
Especially. Yeah. Even with, you know, I see there are kids that are probably 8, 9, 10 years old that can now edit video because they're sitting there editing their TikTok videos and stuff, but they know how to edit video, and it's not terribly different from eventually going to, you know, taking it to the next step. And
no, it's great. I think it's great, man, because it opens up that world that maybe was like more difficult for people to get into because they didn't have the technical skills. It allows more like creative people to like step into the ring too. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to jump around too much. I'm sorry, but
it's all good.
Like,
go ahead.
You know that I do a lot of scoring a picture, and I write music for commercials, and I feel like if it was like 1980 with the skills that I have now in like music theory, and which are none, you know what I mean? Like, I'm, you know, my theory is like awful, like really bad, like middle school level with everything, and my performance skills, like I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing now in the 80s, like with like score, even the 70s with like actually like charting out pieces and giving them to an arranger and an orchestrator to like have people play them. Like, you know, the commercial that I worked on, the Oscar thing, like that whole, like orchestral piece, I never would have been able to write that, you know, like 40 years ago, because I just don't have the theory for it.
Right. But you have the ear for
it. I have the ear for it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And using these plugins that were created to sound like a real orchestra, I was able to like play it out, move MIDI around, and like create parts that I never would have been able to actually like write down physically on paper.
Yeah.
Which again, I think is great for people who don't have those technical skills, you know, to still be creative.
Yeah. And like when you're doing these commercial things, do you always have the commercial in front of you, or are you sometimes writing a little bit blind?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a little bit of half and half. It's always more helpful to have the picture in front of you, for obvious reasons, because you're inspired by it. You're inspired by the tone of the film and like the actions that are happening on screen. I was talking about this with one of my other writing partners, that you make a lot of decisions in the music that you never would have if you didn't have the picture. So like, just to fit within a certain part of the edit, because it wasn't written to a specific part of the piece of music, you'll add a bar of like three randomly in your in your track, or you'll add like an additional like upbeat on your drum beat, or maybe you'll make your drum beat kind of weird because you're trying to fit certain actions in the picture. And you actually end up getting a really cool piece of music out of that. If you listen to the music on its own, it still works. It still feels cool. And you're like, why would I add this moment here? Why would I cut to the B section just randomly after two beats? It's all inspired by the picture. So like half the time we are working a picture, but there are other occasions where we'll kind of get a brief and they'll give you a rough idea of what they want musically. You'll see some, you know, director's treatment of what the, you know, it's, this is supposed to look like. It's going to be filmed like Moonlight, or it's going to be filmed like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. This is just kind of your idea, and we'll sort of pre-score it. That can be helpful too, because, you know, you give that full piece of music to the editor and now they're cutting to your music, which just saves you time later. So it's a little bit of like half and half.
And just to step back into the whole band thing for a second. Yeah. So you were young on GarageBand.
Yeah.
Started a band, middle school, high school. And then how did that end up going forward in terms of, were you doing the production on your demos and stuff?
No, that's the funny thing. So like, yeah, middle school, the bands were kind of like, nothing ever really got serious until Montgomery. I feel like that was the first serious band. And a lot of it came, I think, from Alex, because he was super serious about that stuff. He really wanted to play a lot, and he really wanted to just like make music. And him and Nick, his brother, are just like awesome songwriters. And they're both awesome guitar players. That was the first time like we got serious. And by that time, I was going to school for like audio recording and production. But I just started like kind of getting obsessed with like being a recording engineer. So with the band, more than I got into production, because we were trying to be like a live band, like a live feeling band. We didn't want to add like a bunch of like stuff to our tracks like I do now. Mm-hmm. I was focusing more on just being like a good recording engineer, which I think was a good point in my life, because it's definitely helped me out now. Yeah, we were just obsessed with like, let's get in the studio, let's get these cool sounds, and like, let's just track as many songs as we can. And we were just tracking like singles, doing a lot of like trying to just record albums and put them out on our own, you know what I mean? Just like make CDs and give them away at shows and stuff.
Yeah.
Or like at open mics, you know, that's how we met Carlo.
Right.
You know, just like, yeah, go to open mics at Ringside and Caldwell and like try to just give away some CDs, not even sell them. Just like, please take these.
Yeah. Just listen.
Yeah. And I told you, I gave one to Carlo once and asked him to just like give us some thoughts on it.
Yeah.
And he kind of like smirked and was like, yeah, no, the songs are good, but you know, recordings don't sound like it. The mix could be like a little bit better. And I was like, damn. But that's what we needed. We needed somebody to be honest.
It's tough early on for sure.
Yeah, I know. Especially when you're trying to do it yourself, and like, you always need some help of like experts. That's another cool thing about YouTube and like all these master classes that are coming out. No one's going to give you all their secrets, but like just to see a few little things like can open up a whole new world and like open up new ideas for you on how to accomplish like certain sounds that you're always trying to create or emulate, you know?
Yeah. How do you think that translate to that, that translates to more pop music? Like everything you did as a member of a band,
yeah,
learning the band dynamic,
right?
You know, has that helped you moving forward in production, you think?
Definitely, because like I said, Alex and Nick were really awesome songwriters, and they also like introduced me to a lot of cool music, a lot of cool music that I use as inspiration today when I'm still writing, you know what I mean? But also, I'm a drummer. My dad had a bunch of instruments around the house that I always try to learn, like pianos and like basses and stuff, but I was never into guitar. I never really understood it. Just being in a band, and being so close with Nick and Alex and watching them play, like opened up this whole new world of guitars and like how it works. Even I'm still not a good guitar player, but they helped me understand like how to get certain sounds out of a guitar that you hear on the radio. And now when you hear like these like little funky, you know, breaks, or you hear these like guitar stabs that have a ton of like reverb on them that just appear on the upbeat, like I sort of understand how to accomplish those sounds now. And, you know, I would never really get it as a drummer. Like, how do I get that chord sound, you know, or like that voicing? But just watching them play, watching them write has just helped me understand that side of it a little bit more too, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. You can bring all this experience in music that you have, whether it's for the band or the experience of, you know, when you were much younger, and just bring it to everything you have now, which I think is super important for really anyone doing production.
Yeah, totally.
If you just, you know, open up GarageBand and try to produce a song never having any of that experience, no. Like being a musician, I don't know how that even works. But
another thing that it's taught me, and you and I talked about this not too long ago, was the importance of just a good song. Because I've written, when I was starting very early in production, like I'll go back and listen to the stuff that I've written just as like one person on a computer trying to make a song, and it just sounds like empty. It doesn't feel full. Something is weird about it. Like things just aren't like mixing well together. Things aren't like glued together. This song's just like, it just sucks. It's a poorly written song. And then I'll jump over to like a song by Montgomery, and it's literally just four guys in a room. Everyone has their part, and it just feels so full. It feels like glued together. It feels right because it's a well-written song. Everyone has their part, and it's just like, it's just glued together so perfectly. And that's the important thing, is a well-written song, you know, good progression, a good melody, but also every piece in your production has to have its own part. You know, everybody can't be playing the same thing, just like playing on top of each other, which is what you're doing. You know what I mean? And you get that too, as like a band, or even like Sublime, going to what we have in common. Mm-hmm. That's three dudes. How do the songs, like, how are they so, you know, memorable? How do they mix so well together? Or even when we play live with Nick, it sounds more full sometimes than some stuff that you've heard produced, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it really is just about, and you know this, people who play in bands know this. Actually, rhythm section people probably understand it well, is the whole really servicing the song and not doing too much.
Exactly.
Just kind of staying in your lane, letting the vocals do their thing, letting the lead guitar do their thing a bit, and just kind of, you know, being the backbone to all that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Not trying to be the front man.
Yeah. But I mean, now that, you know, you've been working on production, you get to do everything. You know, you get to be the rhythm section, and then you get to be the lead.
Yeah.
Whatever other part you want to put in there. How is all that experience, being in a band, doing the stuff for commercials? Mm-hmm. How do you think that's helped you forward into kind of doing more of the pop music, the stuff that you and I have been talking a lot about recently?
Yeah, I mean, it's helped a lot in just like understanding, especially the commercial stuff, and understanding the emotionality of a piece of music, of a song, you know what I mean? Like what makes it memorable, what makes it catchy, what makes it sort of fun. And I think a lot of it is about simplicity and sound design, or like sound production. That's what I really learned from the commercial world. A lot of the briefs that you see are really just based on emotion. You know, they give you kind of words that if you saw, you know, like optimistic and, or like memorable or whatever, energetic. These are words that, like, how do you translate that to music? That doesn't, you know, make sense. Like, but if you really think about it, like, a lot of the ways that people are experiencing music is through emotion. And that's what brings me back to the idea of, like, you don't have to be a music theory genius. You don't need to be, like, super technical with music. You just need to understand it on an emotional level. I mean, obviously it helps to understand. I'm just saying that stuff because I don't know anything about it. Try to make myself feel better. Obviously, like, understanding, yeah, like, chord movements and stuff is important, but
it helps, but it is very emotional for sure.
Yeah. And that's what I've learned at, you know, at working on commercials, is like understanding how to capture the emotion properly, but also how to do it in a simple way. Commercial just, like, doesn't work that way. And for pop music, it really feels the same. When you're listening to a song, behind the vocal melodies, like, everything, the music bed itself is so simple. Again, it just goes back to a well-written song. And I think the complexity comes from the vocal melody, the lyrics. That's really who the star is, I feel like, in pop music. So for me, as I'm not a singer, I'm not a vocalist, the creating the background, you know, creating the bed of music that somebody's going to be singing on, it's all about just, like, stripping things back, have a good song, keeping it simple, you know, what captures the right emotion. But also, you and I have been talking about this lately, these, like, the sound production, like, what is that thing in the song that makes it, like, unique, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it could be, like, if it's just a drum beat and a whistle, you know what I mean? Like, why is that whistle so interesting? What makes it so unique? And it's like, it's about spending, like, 2 hours, you know, like, trying things on a whistle until it sounds like cool. You know, I mean, it doesn't sound like a whistle anymore, but it's sort of recognizable, but it's new and it's fresh. I used to do a lot of that stuff at my first job, where we were doing, like, sound branding for, like, you know, for companies. 'Cause you have, like, 3 to 4 seconds to get a little musical idea, like a jingle, you know, to get, like, a musical idea across. How do you make it more unique? Again, you spend 2 to 3 hours on a whistle, like, adding delays and adding effects to it until it's, like, just right. It's unique enough to sound new, but it's still recognizable, like, on a human level.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely just spending those hours. I mean, I know just from talking to you, you're actually real quick on a lot of stuff, but I mean, you spend, like, all day on this stuff, right? So it's become real easy. I say easy for you. You know, I'm sure you're sitting there. You might make it look easier than it feels to be.
No. Yeah. It's just about experimenting.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, just so much about, I heard Alanis Morissette was on an interview talking about told the story that she went in to do her next album after Jagged Little Pill and sat down with her songwriter, couldn't think of anything. And she's like, you know what? I don't want to write music today. I just want to go watch a movie. Mm-hmm. So they're like, fine. They went to go watch a movie. Came back. She had, like, 2 or 3 songs in her already.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that's how songwriters can be, you know, it's very emotional. You watch something, you experience something.
Totally.
That just brings out this emotion where an average person might cry, or they might, experience it a different way.
Yeah.
But a songwriter says, oh no, this has to be filtered through this.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's hard to just, like, force things out sometimes. I think I've gotten a little bit better at that, again, doing the commercial stuff, because you literally have to, otherwise you're not, you know, like, even going to be considered. But no, yeah, totally. And inspiration comes at weird times and weird places. The beauty of technology, again, is, like, everybody has voice memo on their iPhone. So, like, you have just, like, a chord idea or, like, a melody idea. You just sing it into your phone and hope that you can recognize it later. But yeah, I think it is important to not like try to rush things. Otherwise it'll sound forced. You know what I mean? Yeah. To try to like just rush a musical idea down. And at the same time, it's important when you have, when inspiration strikes to like get it down as soon as possible or you'll lose it. That's definitely happened right. to me a lot as well.
Yeah, definitely finding the balance between having those experiences and seeing if they can turn into something.
Yeah.
Like I've listened to some of my favorite comedians talk about the same thing. They're like, I can't just go up on stage and talk about anything. I have to go out and live life for a while.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then that builds my material and that makes so much sense, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So moving forward, you and I are working a lot together.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we should probably get back on track here because I know you're just so busy. It's just,
I know. Wow,
which is good.
I know. I gotta open up.
You know, moving forward into writing pop music, what are some goals or thoughts on your music career, your production career moving forward? Where do you want to be? What do you want to be doing?
Yeah. I feel like there's so many things that I want to do. Not so many, but going all the way back to the beginning where I mentioned I'm not a person who likes to do the same thing over and over again. Kind of just yeah. opening up many. I feel like I always want to be writing for commercials still. I don't know why. I just like really enjoy it. I love writing to picture. And I hope that evolves into more like films too as well, you know, like documentaries or features. And like, I always want to be scoring to picture for sure. But yeah, obviously what you and I are doing is I've realized now through that commercial world and just having so many connections like you and Carlo and all the people that I've met through ads and whatnot is like how the music industry works on the pop side too, as you know, like a songwriter, and how similar, like what I've been doing in commercials is, how similar that is to like actual pop writing as well. So I want to continue, you know, it's like get more, sorry, let me start this idea over. I want to be writing more for like artists and like producing more for either, you know, bands or like single, like pop artists is more of the direction that I'm focused on, sort of like a Ludwig Göransson, you know,
he's the one who does the Childish Gambino stuff,
but also like, you know, works on a ton of like film scores. I don't know if you watched The Mandalorian.
No, I haven't seen it.
I mean, the show is awesome, but the score is just like incredible. He's amazing. But so kind of just like attacking it from all sides. I also have, you know, I want to be able to focus more on music that I want to write as well, that I think is fun. I just, you probably saw, like, started this project that's really starting to get some legs with one of my buddies, a co-writer called the Boca Brothers. Mm-hmm. So we've had a few songs ready for a while now, and now we're really starting to like put that stuff out. It was just one thing I've always struggled with is like putting my music out and having somebody else to like to like fail with makes it less intimidating, you know what I mean, than just like me putting out a single as myself and nobody listening to it, at least if we, right. you know, we fail together. But I don't know, I just want to get more into working with artists and just focusing on music itself, going back to what I really always wanted to do but never understood how to get there, you know, being in a band and stuff, or like recording my friends in my basement on Logic was like always fun for me. It was always something that I wanted to do, but I never understood like how the hell does somebody get there? Or like, you know, what are the appropriate steps to be a producer or like a songwriter? And now later in life, just going through, you know, the commercial world and again, meeting you and everybody, it sort of opened those doors for me. And now there's like a clear path on how to get to that direction, how to get into the studio with songwriters, how to get into the studio with artists, and how to get my music out there. Now that it's become clear, that's the direction I want to step in.
Yeah. I mean, it's so funny how there really is just such a different path that everybody takes.
Right.
But it's, you know, the music industry is just this, it's still the Wild West. You know, you can sort of come out of nowhere and become this big producer because you put a little spin on this track and it happened to do this thing, you know, like it's so, you know, there's no like special degree you need. There's no nothing. If you're, you know, being talented surely helps.
Yeah.
You know, and then the rest of it is just that drive. And if you have the drive, then the luck is much easier to get.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little, it's definitely a lot of luck, but it's also hard work. A lot of hard. I was listening to, I love podcasts now, man. I can't even listen to music anymore. I just listen to podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah. I go through like spurts like that too. For sure.
Yeah. And I was listening to, that comedian actor, Ben Schwartz, you know, from like Parks and Rec and all those.
Yep.
And he was just saying something similar where it's just like, you just have to like, obviously go out there and work your ass off. But like the harder you work, the more lucky you get, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not, luck is a big part of it, but just like putting yourself out there, you're just going to get more lucky. So, and people have asked me, you know, kids just starting out, kids, like I'm not 27, younger people have asked me like, how do you get into the, you know, like commercial writing world? Like how do you wiggle your way into there? And I had a realization where it's like, wow. Yeah. If I wasn't in it, I would be like, how the hell do I get where I am right now? And it's really just like, it just, everything kind of just like fell into place. You know what I mean? It like, I like took an internship and just like met the right people. People gave me opportunities to start writing on stuff. And like now I'm writing on commercials all the time and I'm producing music for commercials all the time. It's just like, kind of just happens without you even noticing sometimes.
Yeah. You never know who you're going to meet. And that's what kind of sucks right now.
Yeah.
Is, you know, you can do these Zoom sessions, but what I'm learning is there's only so many you can do. You know, people aren't going to want to sit and do a Zoom session with maybe someone they don't know right away.
Yeah.
So people are sticking to like their usual songwriting partners and, you know, being out there in person, talking to people, meeting people.
Yeah. Just being human.
Yeah.
Being personal.
Yeah. That's going to hopefully, we'll be able to do that soon.
Yeah.
And then everything we're working on together can be a little more,
can be pushed forward.
You know, yeah. We can start pushing a little bit, but
yeah, at least TikTok still exists. So there's still a chance for people to blow up. I saw there's this one song. I can't even remember the name of it now. We got a brief for a commercial and it had this like, you know, kind of funky, like hip hop-y, very simple track. Again, going back to the simplicity of pop music. And I went to look up the track on Spotify after we got the brief and it had like 3 million streams, maybe more by now. Yeah, probably more. And that was the only song that this dude had on there. And I mean, he had like a blue check mark and everything. He's like certified. The song is a bop and it's the only song he's released. And Emily, just downloaded the TikTok and I've heard that song all over TikTok. And it made me realize like this song has blown up because of TikTok. You know, millions of people see it and then it just gets a ton of streams and now like agencies are using it as a reference track for a commercial. And I think it actually got licensed for that commercial too, which is like nuts, man.
And now so many doors are opening for that particular producer or songwriter because of that, you know? So it really can really happen anyway.
Yeah, exactly. It's all back to the technology, man. It's opening up this world for creative people.
Yeah.
Which I think is good. I mean, that can be bad too, because there can be a lot of people who shouldn't be making music, but.
Yeah, well, that's always the case, just that now we can kind of hear it because everyone can put their stuff on Spotify.
No, but, I think it's better more than it's worse. I like to try to stay positive.
Yeah, there are so many more opportunities for producers and songwriters because, you know, the top 10 songs that exist on mainstream radio, those aren't the only songs.
Yeah, exactly. There's
other songs that are getting millions and millions of streams that the average person listening to Taylor Swift will probably never hear.
Totally. Oh yeah.
A lot of that indie stuff becomes huge
right.
in its own way.
Right. Even like I feel like even Wolfpack in a way. Do you listen to Wolfpack?
Yeah. Yep.
I feel like them in a way too, their earlier stuff was so like niche, or I guess like it was for a certain type of ear. Maybe somebody who appreciates musicianship more than like pop writing, but they've definitely like evolved into a more of a household name, I guess, in a way. But yeah, definitely, man. It's just like, yeah, I think it's great in how many more people can be discovered, you know?
Yeah.
Creative people. You don't have to rely on like a label, like investing in you anymore. Mac DeMarco is another great example. I think I love Mac DeMarco of like, he just kind of did, he has his thing that maybe not everybody loves, and he just did it himself, and he's got a huge fan base now, and he's just releasing music that he loves to make, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I remember we did a showcase for Universal a long time ago, my old band.
Yeah.
And they talked, like, we played a few songs for them, and they just talked about what our social media is like, you know?
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
Because labels don't want to put, I mean, I shouldn't speak for every label, but a lot of labels don't want to put that work in to, like, build your fan base.
Right.
When you can just do it on your own right now, just go do it.
Yeah.
Go play shows, build a fan base, build in TikTok, Instagram, all that stuff. And once those numbers look good,
then they'll invest. Yeah,
yeah, I know. So a lot of that work is now put on the person. But I mean, kids seem to have it down.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of them, you know how to get this huge following. So yeah. I think bands now have figured it out. When I, you know, 10, 12 years ago, Twitter, Instagram wasn't a thing. Twitter was out. Facebook was a thing. There was no real big social media thing that was for bands.
Right.
That bands could exist on. MySpace had kind of died out.
Yeah.
There was no place for bands on Facebook.
Right.
There was no place for band. Yeah, I'm just trying to think of it now. It's like they're really...
There's like Bandcamp, but that's not really social media. And MySpace, I feel like, has evolved to just music now. But like, who the hell goes on there anymore? Can't even remember my login info.
I just heard that the other night. Someone brought up MySpace as being just music. And I'm like, MySpace is still a thing?
Yeah, it's like nobody's using it. Who the hell's going on there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy, man. I'm definitely not good at the social media stuff either. It's definitely something I still need to figure out.
There's just so much out there. I think it's, you know, if you or anyone can stick to like one or two that they kind of like and they're into,
right?
Awesome. But I know these 13-year-olds are probably on 5 or 6 of them. And
how do you even keep track? When Montgomery was like, you know, when we were out trying to do things, we were using a website or a program that like would basically blast everything out to every social media at once. So you would make like one post, and then it would, you know, you could schedule it throughout the week to just auto post, and it would go to like Facebook and Instagram and all at the same time, SoundCloud and all this stuff. So people are creating the resources for sure, but
yeah, people definitely still use stuff like that. That stuff's pretty useful if you're a business or a band or anything.
Yeah, just trying to
stay on there for sure. Well, thank you, man.
Yeah.
I think I can let you go. Thank you so much.
No, it was good to talk to you. Thanks for having me, man.